judicial system. Many of these district attorneys I talked to were very clear about the fact that they would not practice in states where the death penalty was a possibility. I have no idea how many of the existing district attorneys we might lose, or of real talent that might come up in the future that we would lose if we were to adopt death penalty. I also would suggest that it would cause an increased cost to the judicial system as a whole, because of prolonged trials and attempts to impanel a jury willing to consider a death penalty. With my opinion, no prosecutor in his right mind would have me on a jury where the death penalty is a possibility, because I just would not vote for conviction. And the prosecutors are smart enough to pick up on that. It also increased costs because of the mandated appeals and such like that are going to cause problems throughout the state, and potentially cause a lack of trial time, jury time, for other very significant problems throughout the state.
Does that complete your testimony, Susan?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, Susan, thank you for your testimony. If I could just give you a point of clarification here, so you know about the construction of the bill. The bill requires two steps. One step, the jury listens to all the evidences and comes up with a verdict of guilty or not guilty. That has nothing to do with the death penalty. It's the second step where they're re-impaneled, and there's a sentencing step. And at the sentencing step, the jury hears all the evidence again and looks at mitigating and aggravating factors, and then and only then do they recommend or not recommend to the judge that the sentence should be the death penalty. The judge then is the final decision maker as to whether there should be a death penalty given, death penalty sentence. So the jury does not have to determine guilt or not guilt depending upon the death sentence at that point in time. Did I make that clear?
Yes, ma'am, I'm aware of that fact, but I'm also very much aware of the fact that any jury who is impaneled to look at a first-degree murder sentence crime, or a crime that would involve the charge of first-degree murder, is going to be aware of the possibility of a death sentence and is therefore going to hold itself to a higher level of determination of possibility of error.
All right, thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it. Mr. Gordon in Anchorage, and then Edna DeVries, if you could stand by in Wasilla. Wait, Senator Halford, you have a comment for Ms. McClure?
I have a question for the sponsor.
Question for the sponsor, Senator Halford, with your button on.
With regard to the second procedure, does the jury's determination have to be unanimous?
Mr. Halford, the assumption is that it would be.
Okay, it doesn't state that. Does it?
Yes, and we specifically didn't even address it because as it is right now, it has to be unanimous.
Well, it has to be unanimous for a finding of guilt or innocence.
Yes.
And it also has to be unanimous so that any one member of the jury who doesn't feel that the crime and the mitigating and aggravating circumstances warrant the death penalty can essentially stop the death penalty.
That's correct.
Because the judge cannot impose it unless it is first recommended by the jury, although the judge may not impose it even if it is recommended. He can't impose it unless it's recommended. Thank you.
We might want to look at clarifying that in the bill, Senator. Where am I? Mr. Gordon in Anchorage, and then Ms. DeVries, if you'd get ready in Wasilla, please.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
Hi.
My name is Lewis Gordon. I live in Anchorage, and I offer my comments today as the statewide spokesman for the many citizens of Alaska who are members of Amnesty International. I'd like to add some comments to those of Mr. Rohrabacher earlier. Amnesty International is an international organization with 500,000 members in over 100 countries in protection of basic human rights. Nearly 2,000 Alaskans belong to Amnesty International chapters in Anchorage, Cordova, Fairbanks, Homer, Juneau, Kenai, Ketchikan, Palmer, Wasilla, Petersburg, and Sitka. In Anchorage alone, there are 7 active chapters of Amnesty International. Our membership has doubled in the past couple of years. Amnesty International believes that no government has the right to take a life, and that no system of capital punishment, including that being considered by this legislature, can ensure that death will be fairly and consistently applied. Alaska's consideration of the death penalty is occurring during a period of a worldwide trend to abolishing the death penalty. At the rate of one country per year, each of the following countries has abolished the death penalty in the past 10 years. Mexico, Canada, Portugal, Spain, Luxembourg, Norway, Brazil, Peru, France, the Netherlands, Argentina, and Australia. Four more nations abolished the death penalty in 1988 alone. Moves to reintroduce the death penalty have been defeated in a number of countries as well in recent years. The recent rise in the number of death sentences and executions in the U.S. is contrary to all international human rights standards and treaties, which encourage governments to restrict the use of the death penalty and seek the abolition of the death penalty. Amnesty International also opposes the death penalty because application of the death penalty is racially motivated and unfairly applied. Capital punishment in the U.S. has become a grotesque national lottery. For example, if you're a person who lives in the South, you are far more likely to have the death penalty imposed upon you. Two-thirds of death row inmates are from southern states, even though over 40 states have the death penalty. If you're a black person, you're similarly in trouble. 90% of the prisoners executed in the U.S. in the last 10 years have been convicted of murdering whites. This is in spite of the fact that blacks and whites are victims of homicide in roughly equal numbers. In Florida, blacks who kill whites are 40 times more likely to get the death penalty than blacks who kill blacks. Amnesty International opposes the death penalty because it is not just possible, but probable that some who are completely innocent will receive the death penalty. A 1985 study has demonstrated that this century, at least 349 innocent people were wrongly convicted of offenses punishable by death. 23 of these people were in fact executed. 50 of the cases have occurred since 1970. What justice is there for these individuals? There are indeed sick people in our society that need to be separated from us, and we already have a proven and effective way to deal with them. 99 years in jail without possibility of parole, an option which our judges can and frequently do exercise. Amnesty International opposes the death penalty because the mechanics of adjudicating capital cases are flawed. Prosecutors have wide power of discretion on whether or not to seek the death penalty. Juries, too, will have considerable discretion, even under this bill, in weighing aggravating and mitigating circumstances and deciding who will live and who will die. Amnesty International opposes the death penalty because the experience of being under sentence of death and of execution is cruel, inhuman, and degrading. Under the Senate bill, lethal injection is the method of execution. When James Autry was executed by lethal injection in Texas in 1984, he took at least 10 minutes to die. Throughout much of that time, he was conscious, moving about, and complaining of the pain. In the execution of Stephen Morin by lethal injection in Texas in 1985, medical technicians spent more than 40 minutes searching his limbs for a vein in which to insert the needle. Amnesty International opposes the death penalty because it is not a deterrent to violent crime. The preponderance of research has shown that over the years, the murder rate in death penalty states is little different from that in non-death penalty states. The United States Supreme Court has agreed that the evidence of the death penalty serving as a deterrent is inconclusive. Much of the support for executions in Alaska is in response to especially horrible crimes, such as mass murders. However, these are precisely the type of people least likely to be deterred by the death penalty. People who do not act rationally, people who are mentally incapable of considering the consequences of their actions. When all of the pro-death penalty arguments are analyzed critically, the only one that remains is revenge, an eye for an eye. Amnesty International, as a worldwide human rights organization, rejects this argument on the grounds that no crime, however serious, justifies the infliction of cruel and inhuman punishment. Our criminal code does not hand out the same punishment as the crime, the raping of rapists or the burning of arsonist homes. Neither should it permit the state to murder murderers, even if the public were to call out for just that. Opposing the death penalty in no way implies a lack of respect or concern for the victims of violent crime and for their families. An execution cannot restore life or lessen loss. On the contrary, executions often draw attention away from the needs of the victims, focus it on the person being killed by the state. In summary, Amnesty International opposes the death penalty in Alaska because it is a fundamental violation of human rights. because it is wrongly and unfairly applied, because it does not work, and because it is cruel, inhuman, and degrading. Finally, I'd like to add that I was present at last year's hearing before the same committee, and I would like to remind the committee that the testimony at that time preponderated in favor of those who were opposed to the death penalty. Thank you.
Okay. What I'd like, the cooperation of those folks, there's 40 more people to testify across the state at least, and what I'd like is if your organization has already testified, if you could give your place up to a person who's representing another organization or themselves so that we can kind of keep the testimony moving. Mr. Brees?
I might point out that, to my knowledge, there are no other spokespeople for Amnesty International. Mr. Rohrbacher is the only one that you've heard from before.
Yes, sir, and he gave very, very good testimony, and you gave good testimony, too. I'm just trying to get as many people as possible before we repeat, and your testimony did repeat some of the same information statistics he gave. I'm just trying to get more people to testify today, especially since they've been waiting. We do appreciate your testimony. I'm just trying to get even more. Mr. DeVries?
And perhaps the process could go even more quickly if senators resisted the temptation to ask questions that are more in the nature of argument rather than truly searching for facts from the witnesses as they have done so far.
Well, sir, we're politicians, and you know how hard it's to stop to get us to talk. If we could continue, please, Mr. DeVries.
This is Rockville, and I no longer have anyone here to testify.
All right, thank you very much. Brad Scott in Fairbanks, please. Mr. Scott in Fairbanks, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Would you testify, please, sir?
Basically, I'm a member of Amnesty International here in Fairbanks. The majority of the points that I was going to make have been made by previous witnesses. I would just like to reiterate that we do have a large group of people in Fairbanks that are members of Amnesty International who support the testimony that's been previously given.
Oh, Mr. Scott, thank you very much. You get 10 merit points for your testimony today. Mr. Bill Stivers in Anchorage, please. You're next.
I'm Bill Stivers. I live in Anchorage.
You're next.
I oppose the death penalty legislation. Since statistical analysis suggests that application of the death penalty fails to decrease incidence of homicide, it is essential that alternatives to this barbaric practice be explored. Does not our social institutions, which reward greed, fail to provide basic necessities to many of our citizens, stimulate violent behavior, particularly of those who are marginalized? The pattern of violence is set by our highest leaders by their predations and responsibility for mass murder in the third world and their demonstrated contempt for U.S. and international law. During his address at the Riverside Church in New York City on April 4th, 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. noted that the U.S. government was, quote, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, unquote. He also observed that, quote, an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring, unquote. The death penalty would aggravate social violence by further diminishing respect for life. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, very, very much. Ronald Daly, please, in Anchorage. I'm sorry. You're next, Mr. Daly.
Thank you. My name is Ron Daly. I thank you for the chance to testify today. I'm opposed to the death penalty for many reasons, but I'll only mention two today. In my opinion, no government should execute its own people. Around the world, governments often execute people for political reasons. The second thing is, only a few industrialized countries allow the use of the death penalty. Those countries are Iran, Soviet Union, Communist China, South Africa, and the United States, among the U.S. I like living in the United States. I like living in Alaska. I hate to see my country and my state compared with these other countries. To amplify on my second point, I saw two articles in last Saturday's Anchorage Daily News. That's Saturday, January 21st, 1989. The first article about this hearing and about this bill concerning the death penalty that's being brought before the Alaska legislature. The second article was about Iran adopting the death penalty for drug users. In my opinion, the comparison between the state of Alaska and the country of Iran has already started. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, very much. Are there any comments? Okay, we have Mr. Charles Campbell in Juneau here to testify, and after Mr. Campbell, we'll go to Mark Johnson in Anchorage. Mark, if you could come to the microphone and be ready, please. Mr. Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Charles Campbell. I'm a resident of Juneau. I served as Director of Corrections for the state of Alaska for 3 years, beginning in February 1979. I have worked in the criminal justice system for more than 30 years, most of that time with the federal prison system. I prepared a written statement, but I am going to revise that to try to clarify the apparent discrepancy between the Justice Department data on the matter of racial bias and what appears to be true from other sources. I'd like to speak to the two primary arguments in support of the death penalty. I am opposed to this bill. I'm opposed to the death penalty under any circumstances. With respect to deterrence, it's been said that during the 8-year moratorium following the decision in Furman versus Georgia, the United States Supreme Court considered reams of material on the issue of deterrence and was unable to conclude that there was a deterrent value to capital punishment. Indeed, there were extensive studies finding that executions may indeed be more likely to incite than to deter potential murderers. The most disturbing of these is perhaps a study done by Professors Bauer and Pierce at Northeastern University that studied public executions in New York State over a course of 65 years, and indeed found rather disturbing evidence that the public reaction to executions may result in more in predisposed people being inclined to commit violent and vicious crimes. These studies, in fact, no study on the question of deterrence can claim to be incontrovertible. There are far too many variables. But it can be said that the weight of the empirical evidence strongly argues against the death penalty if our concern is with the matter of reducing the incidence of major violent crime. Those who feel that it is simply a matter of common sense and that it is only reasonable to assume that the threat of execution should deter most potential murderers fail to recognize that the mental processes of individuals who are predisposed to vicious, pathological kinds of criminal acts are completely different from the thought processes of emotionally healthy people. The thought processes of people predisposed to cold-blooded, premeditated murder are bizarre. It really should not be surprising that the death penalty does not deter. But we must remember let me skip a portion of that. And so if we are willing to leave the matter of deterrence aside, we have as the remaining justification for the death penalty, retribution. I have respect for those who honestly take the view that society has a need and a right to kill the perpetrators of vicious capital crimes in order to exact a retribution, quite aside from the question of deterrence. I don't share such a view, but it is an honest view. I identify with, and indeed I share, the outrage and the anger that are inevitable reactions when we hear of certain kinds of crimes. But we must remember that rage and anger, however normal, however healthy, indeed, however necessary in the beginning, are emotions that, if nurtured and sustained, get in the way of wisdom. If you do subscribe to the validity of retribution as the sole justification for the death penalty, indeed, whatever reasons you may have for wanting to see restoration of the death penalty in Alaska, please have these few considerations in mind. Of the 37 states that chose to rewrite and pass death penalty legislation after Gregg versus Georgia, only 13 have carried out executions. 3/4 of all executions carried out in the United States during the past 20 years were done in only 4 states: Texas, Louisiana, Florida, and Georgia. There is an appalling unevenness in the use of the death penalty. The racial and cultural bias in the use of the death penalty has been proven. Ted Bundy, who was executed this morning, became something like a celebrity because he was a serial killer, but also because he was middle class and college educated. I challenge you to give me the name of a single one of the 104 people who have been executed since Gary Gilmore went down in what he did consider a blaze of glory 12 years ago. The majority of that anonymous 104 were poor, uneducated, if not illiterate. They were not serial killers. Many were poorly defended by appointed counsel. A disproportionate number were black. Many of them were victims of the luck of the draw. It was a matter of how circumstances fell for them. Even in those states that execute a lot of people, like Texas, Florida, Louisiana, and Georgia, there are hundreds of people serving sentences whose crimes were more vicious than many of those who have been executed. There is an intrinsic capriciousness in the use of the death penalty, and there is no way to correct it. But we don't have to correct it here in Alaska. All we have to do is remain among those staunch 13 states where the death penalty is not authorized. We do not have a problem that would be addressed by restoration of the death penalty. If ever imposed, it would create a morass of ugly, culturally divisive, costly problems for our state. There are far better, more civilized, more reasonable ways to respond to the most serious kinds of criminal acts. It cannot be reasonably argued that there would be one iota of improvement in the safety, the happiness, or the general welfare of the people of Alaska resulting from restoration of the death penalty. I would urge the committee to consider this question with great care. I trust each of you will spend some private time over this matter, certainly before your final vote. I believe that you will conclude that Alaska has no need for Senate Bill 17 or anything similar to it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir. Any comments? Senator Halperin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been a while. The question I had is, while you were commissioner, I'm sure you know the issue has been ongoing for quite a while, but the constitutional questions have been brought up. And I wonder if you remember any of the historical debate on the constitutional questions with regard to Article 1, Section 12, and the requirements that corrections be operated for essentially protection of the public and rehabilitation, or I'm not sure what's the word they use, reformation. How retribution fits into that constitutional scheme, if we're so honest as to say that retribution is the reason for capital punishment.
I certainly don't believe that there was a requirement that retribution be a part of our program.
Well, I know there's no requirement, but is there a prohibition?
Certainly not. I should think not.
Okay, I won't pursue that, but I think that's a question that we're going to eventually get into as a committee, because I think that's the section that's referred to when the question of capital punishment and the Constitution are put together.
What is the status of the teleconference?
Madam Chairman, it appears that we can have room for an additional hour.
All right, what we have asked the next group of senators and the next committee to allow us to continue this teleconference for another hour, and the moderator says it's okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I will continue to listen. For those folks who would like to stay and testify, we will stay here for another hour to take testimony for you. And the next person is up is Mr. Johnson.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Please, we can hear you.
Okay. My name is Mark Johnson. I'm a student at the University of Alaska, and I'm also a member of the Anti-Death Penalty Information Network. I'm a 23 resident of Anchorage, 23-year resident, and I'd like to say that I'm opposed to this bill for very many reasons, most of which have already been stated today. One reason which I haven't heard come up yet, I noticed that someone earlier stated that they were afraid that murderers, once convicted and put in prison and not executed, may be freed again and may actually kill again. But I have a statistic here that in the U.S., less than 1% of murderers that have been freed actually do kill again. So there doesn't seem to be much to be afraid of in that respect. Mostly, I believe that killing is wrong. I believe that it is wrong for the state to kill people, and it is wrong for individuals to kill other individuals. And I don't think we should sanction any kind of state murder.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We appreciate your testimony. If the folks that still wish to testify in Anchorage will line up, we'll hear you now. You're the only ones there to testify. Eric Taskers is next, and then Harry Rosenfeld.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, oh, well, we can now, sir. We just could hear you. If you would testify, please, sir.
Do you know this is Anchorage? Can you hear us?
No.
Yes, can you hear Juno? Can you hear Juno now? The ghost is coming with us again. It's both microphones, so just keep going with the testimony from
Anchorage.
Anchorage, we can hear you from.
Yes, Mark, testimony.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Was part of my testimony cut off?
No, sir. We heard you loud and clear, Mr. Johnson. We're waiting for Mr. Taskers now.
And Mr. Taskers can now approach the mic, please. Can you hear me now? Yes, Mr. Taskers, is that the name? Yes, Mr. Taskers, please.
I have Taskers.
Hear me?
Yes, sir. Would you start again, please?
All right. My name is Eric Tasker. I'm very much in favor of this bill, this death penalty. I have two points to make. First, I think that by making a special class out of the firemen, policemen, and so forth, you're creating a uneven treatment of the law and inviting constitutional death. Constitutional challenge. So I recommend that you take out line from 23 to 29 on page 7. The my second point is that whenever a death penalty is proposed, people come forward and say, but the innocent victims will be executed. And people like Wagstaff say, and they are correct, the judicial system is imperfect. But to that, I say, by not executing criminals, hardened murderers, an even larger number of innocent victims is put at risk. I don't know exactly what how accurate the state system is, but I've never seen a study on it. I have seen studies that suggest that a high percentage of parole or escape murderers, the hardcore, demented, amoral types that would be normally that would be sentenced to death if the death penalty existed, do recommit similar types of crimes. So several points of information should be studied. First, just how accurate is the or correct is the judicial system? And second, how many of the hardcore murders are paroled or escaped? And third, what percentage of those who are let out actually recommit the murders? So you can do it. You can get your arms around the issue by some simple arithmetic. Let's say that the state of Alaska is 90% correct, or makes a 10% error, so that 100%. So for every 10 people that are executed, one is innocent, but nine with innocent victims are prevented, are saved. Now, that's probably the extreme end of the spectrum. Perhaps the court system is only 1% in error. So out of every 100 executions, one innocent victim is executed. And let's say that only half of those paroled or escape recommit murder. So that means that for every innocent victim who is executed, 49 people in the general public are innocent victims or potential victims are saved. And we could go one step further. Perhaps the state is correct in 1 out of 1,000 times, which I doubt. And even if and only 25% of the those paroled recommit murder, then you have one innocent victim who is executed by the state, and 249 members of the general public whose lives have been saved. So I'd like to see the committee look into the broad statistical situation to get it, to put the issue in perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taskers. Could Mr. Harry Rosenfeld come to the microphone, please? And next is Jane Yokoyama.
Senator Fakes and members of the committee, this is Rabbi Harry Rosenfeld of Congregation Beth Shalom. With all the statistics and whatnot, I still feel that basically the issue of capital punishment and the issue of societal murder and death, both of victims and perpetrators, is an ethical and moral consideration. Several people have already spoken to the Judeo-Christian ethic of our society, and John Schaefer spoke eloquently earlier, my friend in Southeast, to the Christian side of the ethic, and I'd like to speak to the Judeo side of that same ethic, if I might. It cannot be denied that capital punishment, the death penalty, killing people, criminals, has been a part of Jewish tradition for many centuries, if not millennia. Biblically, of course, is obvious. The crimes which were considered capital offenses included murder, idolatry, sexual crimes, and recalcitrant children. You didn't like your kids, you said they were bad, took them to the gates of the city, and they were put to death. But for approximately 2,100 years ago, 200 years before the advent of Christianity, this ethic and the feelings of the Jewish leaders began to change. By the year 200, 1,700 years ago, the changes in this ethic were complete. Those early rabbis, and as the tradition has continued through these years, later rabbis as well, did not eliminate the death penalty from existence from Jewish tradition and thought. It is considered to be divine from God. However, it is up to us as to how we implement that punishment, and I would like to discuss that the application and the requirements for the application of the death penalty as part of the Judaic ethic. First of all, in order for capital punishment to be sentenced, there need to be two eyewitnesses, actual eyewitnesses to the crime, who not only see the crime take place, but who before the crime warn the potential perpetrator of the crime that they are about to commit an offense for which they could be put to death. Not only must they verbally warn the person, they must actively try and stop the crime. Two, the witnesses must be fully lawful people, never having broken any legal or ethical structures. If the witnesses cannot meet that test, then they are not valid witnesses. This is a very early concept within Jewish literature and was expressed by Jesus in the New Testament, according to Christian literature as well, as in, let ye who have no sin cast the first stone. In addition,
plaintiffs and the witnesses must have no possible gain from the execution of the criminal. The court that tries the person must consist of three judges and must not be known as a murderous court. That is a court, and a murderous court is defined as a court which has sentenced someone to death in the past 70 years. One sentence of death every 70 years is considered to be murderous by the Jewish ethic. Fourth, on the way to the execution, it is up to the, and up to the moment of death, it is up to officers of the court, including the judges, to actively look for any reason, other testimony, mitigating factors to commute the sentence from death to imprisonment. And the last of the points I'd like to touch on in terms of these conditions is that the execution is performed by the witnesses who testified that they saw the crime, warned the person, and tried to stop the crime. They are to use medium-sized stones. This would ensure a large stone would kill the criminal too quickly. Small stones would prolong their agony. This long discussion is given as to why not use large stones to have a quick and painless death. The answer is given that it's a deterrent. Not a deterrent to future criminals, but rather a deterrent to future executioners. Because seeing the criminal in pain emphasizes that the person is still a human being. If the witnesses show any hesitation in performing the execution, or, on the other hand, show too much zeal for performing the execution, the sentence is automatically commuted to life imprisonment. If any one of the above restrictions was in doubt, then the court could order severe punishment but not death. Therefore, it is obvious to conclude that killing a criminal became virtually, if not totally, impossible. I'd also like to address an issue of the rights of victims. We in our society today, in word, in deed, in our media, in our relationships with others, seem to be doing everything we can to decrease the value of life. I think it's up to our society, from an ethical moral view, to add value to life and to support that each life is precious and that no one has the right to take a life, be we a private citizen or the state. Killing a person who has committed a crime does not protect the rights of the victim. The rights of victims would be better served by establishing programs to help them. Help them in the after effect, but also programs and strictures in our society to make it harder for them to become victims in the first place. By our killing people, we as a society, it's not the government, it's not the actual executioner who would insert the needle or pull the trigger of the gun. It is we as a society who would be killing these people. We would be sending a message that life has no value, not that life has value. We would be saying that we are a society whose ethic is one that is based on death and not life. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Hearing no questions, Jane Yokoyama, and then Carla Huntington will be after Jane.
Hello, my name is Jane Yokoyama. I am speaking as a private citizen, and I am opposed to the death penalty. My arguments have been stated more eloquently by others, but to summarize, does the Death Penalty act as a deterrent? No. Is the death penalty applied equally? No. Will the death penalty always be applied correctly? No. Is the death penalty less expensive to the state? No. I'm not saying that a person who commits a murder should go unpunished. Of course not. It's all right to be angry, to be frustrated, to feel pain. It's all right to want vindication when any life is taken. But it is not right to respond to one death by another. Nothing justifies a murder, and the death penalty is exactly that, murder. Whether it be the state or an individual, killing is killing. To pass Senate Bill 17 would only add other tragic and unnecessary deaths to those already committed. Thank you.
Jane, thank you very much for your testimony. Carla Huntington next, and then Alex Kochkin, if I'm saying that right, Mr. Kochkin, you'll be after Ms. Huntington.
Carla had to leave, so if we can just go on with that.
Yes, then Alex Kochkin, am I saying that right? Then Marie Majewski would be next.
Yes.
We hear you, sir. You may continue. You may proceed. I'm sorry.
This is Alex Kochkin. I'm a professional researcher and consultant in Anchorage. I'm on record as opposing death penalty here. My comments are brief. The nearsighted, near hysteria that and nearsightedness seems that was let loose in Florida this past few weeks is truly frightening. The Bundy case is quite extraordinary, and because of this, it will be used by many of those advocating revenge in the name of justice and retribution, particularly the death penalty. A person of the privileged social background that Bundy had is indeed an exception when one considers 80 to 90% of those on death row currently are black or minority and are mostly from the poorest, most economically and socially disadvantaged and desperate strata of America. Those on death row are not professional hitmen from the mafia or similar types. It is also extraordinary that an estimated $6 million and substantial human resources have been spent trying to execute this one individual. Contrast this to the potential good that such resources could have been used for in trying to correct the conditions and attitudes which give rise to the majority of the heinous acts committed by individuals against one another, such as abuse of women and children, murder, rape, etc. But personal indignations and the economics of incarceration versus execution or other such neat formulas cannot be the determining factor for deciding such an important matter. We need to evaluate and correct our own personal values and the social cultural factors which provide the conditions for individuals to commit such atrocities to begin with. We need to try to build a society which provides a nurturing environment for individual growth, which will in turn create, help build a healthy society. At a national, at a whole social level, America has been and continues to be a fundamentally violent society, only it is a violence which is rationalized and denied according to circumstances. Consider that we have and continue to have governmental leaders who, in the name of political expediency, finance, protect, and otherwise support drug lords around the world, a somewhat contrary course to their professed interest in controlling harmful drugs. Consider the institutional violence of war and the institutional violence of poverty and homelessness. These are not hallmarks of a caring and humane society, and is not and simply helps to create a more brutal one. Waging of mass destruction through official and unofficial wars against other nations and assassination of governmental leaders which don't agree with our views also cause violence to our psyche individually and nationally. Such as Central America, where freedom, so-called freedom fighters are committed to trade and ship cocaine and out of the U.S. and elsewhere with cooperation assistance of the U.S. government. Within our cities, personal and social violence of poverty and family violence on our streets and homes is criminal in its own right. And that it affects our social values at a national level and individual spiritual values and our way of looking at things or not looking at things. It's dangerous indeed for us to judge whether to take another's life because of what they may have done, even one who has committed murder. No, the execution of individuals will not bring any solution and may even cause greater evil through providing another vehicle or outlet for revenge or rage or retribution on a broader scale, while not addressing fundamental problems and conditions which set the stage for individuals to commit such atrocities to begin with. I definitely urge that Alaska not have any death penalty legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Is Marie there, please? And then Kathleen Taxinger will be next, or Tracinger?
Marie had to leave, so we'll go right on to Kathleen.
Okay, I'm sure I mispronounced her name.
My name is Kathleen Taxinger.
Not too bad. Please proceed, Kathleen. Nice having you here with us today.
I've lived up here in Alaska for 32 years. Came up here as a young bride and homesteaded. But I've come here to speak for my children and my grandchildren, mostly all in Alaska. And the media has voiced the tone of the president for being a kinder and gentler nation. Murder is a terrible crime, and those that commit murder are the scum of our society. I do not believe in bowing to the murderer's level of action. Alaska has generally not followed what the other states do, and we pride ourselves on being individual Alaskans. I want to raise my children and grandchildren in a state which I can proudly say is a kinder and gentler state. I strongly urge you to reject the death penalty and promote the same to our young people in a more positive manner. Thank you.
Kathleen, thank you. Senator Fisher has a question for you.
Yes, a quick question. Kathleen, how did you hear about the hearing?
I am a fourth-year student at the University of Alaska in the criminal justice system, criminal justice department. And I have several friends that are attorneys, and one attorney called me and asked me to come and talk.
Oh, thank you.
And because I want to say what I need to say.
Well, we're glad you testified, and we're glad you took the time and the effort to come down and be on the record, Kathleen.
And all of the people that opposed this did a little bit of their homework, because they filled the first three rows of the room here. But I looked back here on some of the things that were stated here earlier, one by Mr. Bollenbach, that it only cost about $500,000 to imprison someone for 40 years. I remember when Richard Hansen was sentenced, and we sent him to Pennsylvania for prison. They came out in the paper and said it was going to cost us somewhere in the neighborhood of $697,000 for the next 10 years to keep him in Pennsylvania. Not only did we send him to Pennsylvania and they're going to pay that, the state of Alaska moved his family to Pennsylvania so they could live outside the prison and be with Mr. Hansen on his life term there in Pennsylvania. They talk about cruel and unjust to the person that was accused of the crime. I don't understand where the rights of the victim is. Where is the common citizen? He has no rights, it doesn't appear. It appears that once the criminal has committed a crime, he's the one that has all the rights. And I don't quite understand what our system is going to here. You know, they say that, looking over just the last few years, we have Richard Hansen, which was a stripper killings, admitted to at least 17. Charles Meach killed the four kids at Russian Jack. Louis Hastings killed six in McCarthy. James Wirtz shot the police officer. Winona Fletcher and Cordell Boyd killed the Fazios. Kirby Anthony killed three, Kirby Anthony, that's right, the Newman killing. And then Kelvin Collins at the Lamplighter apartment killings that killed three or four. And we're going to house these people for the rest of their lives, and if they want to get a college degree, we'll give them a college degree. These people are not rehabilitatable. They've proven that they can't be. So let's get together on this, and let's visit about this. Let's hear the pros and let's hear the cons of this capital punishment. And let's work it out. At least it's come to us and come into the open so people can voice all of their opinions and get something together on this thing. Mark Johnson said something about the people that were released from prison that were killers, that less than 1% had committed an additional crime or additional killing. But how many have committed other crimes since they've left prison? I would say that the percentage is much more that did commit them that did not. Let's keep this going, and let's try to get this thing talked about and get a lot more attention from everyone around so we can get much more of an opinion than just of so few. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming out and giving us your opinion. For the record, for folks to know, in the state of Alaska, it costs approximately $35,000 a year to house a prisoner. So you all can do your mathematics. About $35,000 a year to house a prisoner in the state of Alaska. Next up, witness, please. Carol Rotten.
My name is Carol Rope, and I'm the mother of Brian Rope, who was gunned down in a car the day after Christmas. I'm not a public speaker, so you'll have to forgive me if I sound like I'm getting ready to have a heart attack. I keep hearing about a person's right to be alive, and I just have to really dwell on that. And as I think of me speaking here and people talk about vengeance, I'm not a vengeful person, and as I think of the person that murdered my son, I still have to have pity for a person whose life is just so low, and who was apparently raised in such an environment that they just have no concern for other people's lives. And this Amnesty group, maybe they need to spend some of their time going to some of these places where some of these young people are growing up and help them to become better citizens so they don't result in what happened in this particular person that took my son's life. But I have to say that the strength of our nation is rapidly declining as a direct result of the way we wink at sin. We coddle the criminal. And this is what is lowering our civilization, not somebody wanting to institute the death penalty. And it seems like our state is becoming more and more a refuge for the criminal. We've lived here since 1974, and I'm just appalled at how more and more you read in the newspapers and hear, I mean, here in the last couple months, it seems like it's been every week somebody else is murdered. Murders are on the rise in the state. And when we look at the reason for some of the, that these people are being murdered, some of the pettiness, it's time that the citizens of this state attempt to get our laws changed to deter this type of thing from becoming an ever-increasing occurrence. I do believe that if this type of person, evil as they might be, knew that they would lose their own life for their actions, that many of them would think twice before they acted. And I have to say that I congratulate the governor of Florida for following through with the execution of Ted Bundy. I know he was probably pressured a lot to do otherwise, but I have to admire him for standing up. And I hope that Ted Bundy repented of his sins and accepted Christ as his Savior and truly meant it before he died. But all of the choices that he made were his own, including every time he killed somebody. The newspaper said that he was afraid. It said some other statements about basically, though, that he was afraid. And I'm wondering if some of these people that count the statistics, does this count for some of the statistics that maybe this would be a deterrent? I do want to see that capital punishment become a law in the state with the hope that it will deter many of the senseless acts, such as the murder of my son Brian, from happening to others in the future. But I do know that this would remove an evil person from society. And people talk about rehabilitation, but I've heard it over and over again that a lot of these people, you cannot rehabilitate them. And they say it's barbaric to have capital punishment. Well, to me, it's barbaric when someone will gun somebody down in cold blood and then we turn around and coddle them and we support them for the rest of their life, their normal life with shelter and food and education and color TVs and gymnastic rooms and everything else. And I might add, and I know it's been said over and over again, and it's been quoted in newspapers regarding the so-called bleeding heart, that if it did happen to one of your own, that people's tunes would be changed very, very quickly. And I know I heard a couple months ago, either read it in the newspaper or heard it on the radio or something, that one out of every four families will become victims of some type of violence in the United States. And when I heard that, I thought, well, I don't know how that's going to touch our life because, you know, this word is not around in that kind of circle. But it sure hit home the day after Christmas. And as for the rights of the murderers, to me, I have to agree with somebody else that said they relinquished their rights when they took the life of an innocent person. Because my son's rights were violated. His treatment was cruel and inhumane.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I know how painful it's got to be for you, and I know what you're going through in your grief. And I just want you to know the committee and myself really appreciate you coming out and sharing your opinion with us. Next person to testify, please, Mark Levy. Levy?
It's Levy.
Oh, good. Thank you. Mark, would you please continue or proceed?
Yeah, this is my first time ever doing something like this, so if I sound kind of naive, I am.
No, please. Everyone is doing very, very well. We just want normal people to testify, which is what we all are, and everyone's doing great. So don't worry about it. Just say what you'd like, and we're taking it down, and we'll have it recorded for the record.
Okay, well, I have a question, first of all, for you, Senator Banks. What is this book you're quoting from so I can look it up, please?
Yes, and I'll be glad if you call my office collect later, we'll be glad to send it to you. It's Capital Punishment 1987, and it's put out by the Bureau of Justice Statistics. It's a bulletin put out by the Department of Justice of the United States. And I think the reason why there may appear to be some differences in the statistics is the stuff that I was quoting is just for 1987. It's in the packet of all the senators, and it was the backup material presented to us, and the other folks, or some of the other folks, are quoting statistics over several years, or over this century, or over the last 20 years. So I don't think anybody's statistics are wrong. You just have to know where they're coming from. And so this one, we'll be glad to send you if you let us know your address, or tell the moderator, and we'll send it to you.
Okay. I have some other questions here. First of all, I'd like to go to this little class of citizens you have that are basically, if you kill them, they're going to be, you know, you're going to be put on death row. I noticed that you don't have doctors or nurses here. These are people who work all night long saving people's lives. Also, my mother is a nurse, and I feel real resentful that just because she's not a fireman or a police officer, but she's out there trying to save lives, that she's not the privileged class of people who will have people executed if they kill her. My father's retired Air Force. I don't see ex-military people under here also. I noticed that one of the things for the definition of the death penalty is aggravated battery. Does this also include wife beaters? I'd like to know that under the conduct that causes the death of two or more people or creating a risk of imminent injury to three or more people, does this include drunk drivers? Since if you're driving down the road drunk, that is creating an imminent threat to society. Now, I do have a couple things I would like to quote here as soon as I find my page in my book. If I can find my page in my book, here we go. Lethal injection seems to me to be really weird, since you have to have a doctor to inject the person with the poison, and doctors took basically the Hippocratic Oath to save lives. Here you're having the state saying, well, you can forget about it this one time, this person is bad, you should kill him. To me, that's making it, I forgive the word, but a hypocrite of the doctor when their purpose is to save lives. Let me quote from a little paper here. In many ways, it is not surprising that lethal injection has been enjoying a new popularity as the preferred form of the death penalty. It is a method of killing that fits in well with the American mentality. It's quick, clean, cheap, efficient, and clinical. The Nazis 30 years ago realized the potential of dressing up state-sanctioned murder in medical clothing. Thus, an execution becomes a medicinal procedure. Virginia, for example, recently considered adopting lethal injection as a replacement for electrocution as the state method of execution. A Virginia state senator expressed the rationale eloquently. With lethal injection, he said, you don't have a body that's been cooked. I am speaking just for myself. I know I do not share the views of my family. I personally would rather see my tax money go into keeping a person in jail without parole for the rest of his life instead of murdering. I do believe in the studies that say the death penalty is more expensive. I do not believe in the death penalty. I like to believe we are civilized enough to realize that if they can't be taught or rehabilitated, at least we can keep them out of society but still alive. I believe that, you know, when there's life, there's hope. Winston Churchill once said that the greatest test of a civilization is how they treat their criminals. If we're going to adopt the death penalty, I think we honestly have failed. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And if you will give those questions to the moderator, they'll get some facts down here, and I'll give them to the prime sponsor, and he can answer them in writing for you. Janice Linehart would be next, and then S. Nahoney would be after that, and Wayne Moore, bless your heart, if you're still there, you're next.
Madam Chairman, I do believe all three of the people you just referred to have had to leave, so I think next is Tim Dixon.
Or has Brenda left? Roten?
She has changed her mind.
Okay, Tim Dixon is next, and thank you very much.
Yes, my name is Tim Dixon, and I am a resident of Anchorage. I've been here 10.5 years. Brian Roten was my very good friend, and I would like to speak to you on an issue of murder and what the Bible has to say about it. In Genesis chapter 9, verse 6, it says, whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for that in the image of God made he man. We sit here today, and I've heard testimonies for good or for the death penalty or against it. We talk about people's rights. And it just blows me away that people think that, well, a criminal has rights when he has made a choice to break the laws that we have set up. This states right here that it is not our decision what to do about someone who has broken the law or who has took a person's life. God made these laws for all men to follow. We base our nation today upon God, and we're so far away from what God has to say about the crimes that people commit. And it's so hard. you know, I think about these people who are out here who have never had a tragedy to take place like this in their lives. And all I would like for you to know down there is when you make the law, what you're really going to be deciding, well, should we follow what God has commanded us to do or not? Because God has undecided what to do about people who have, a person who has taken another person's life knowingly. And murder is a whole lot different than manslaughter. In Exodus 21:12, God also said that he that smiteth a man so that he die shall be surely put to death. And throughout the whole Bible, God has given us instructions and commandments on how to live our lives. I've heard other people here quote the Bible. I heard that they said, well, who of you with, that has no sin cast the first stone? They did not read this passage in context. They just take one part of the scripture. These here that I'm reading today, they are from a group of laws that God commanded for people to follow. And I heard a man that seemed to be Jewish even talk about Christ. Jews don't even believe that Christ was the Son of God. And he even made reference to Jesus. And I hear so many people just, it seems like they're talking one through one ear and out the other, and they just keep saying, you know, just keep saying things that just that come back to them in the end about human rights and things like that. And they make a fuss over somebody who has no regard for human rights at all. Thank you.
Tim, thank you very much. We really appreciate you coming out. Ms. Rob Yeager there, please.
Hello. My name is Rob Yeager. I'm a resident of Anchorage. And I appreciate your courage in approaching an emotional issue and drawing up Senate Bill 17. I do support it. I believe that individuals that would commit a crime that would fall in that category of first-degree murder have given up their human rights and do not deserve to be protected. They should be punished. The punishment needs to fit the crime. There's a sliding scale of punishment for various crimes, and at the extreme end for first-degree murder, I think death is appropriate. It does send out a clear signal, and I'm sure it does deter, maybe not to a large percent, but even if it did, even just once or a few times, it would justify its use. On the Alaska license plate, it says, Alaska, the last frontier. The last frontier has seen thousands of skilled, hardworking people come across its borders and contribute. Alaska's growth, and it's seen a minority of a few individuals who are bad. They would commit a crime, and in the case of first-degree murder, I believe they should be cut from society and not be allowed the privilege to continue to run rampant and inflict injury on other citizens. I support the bill.
Rob, thank you very much. Michelle Noble is next, Lisa Fitzpatrick, and then John Salemi.
Hi, I'm Michelle Noble. I'm a senior at Diamond High School, and I'm 18 years old, and I'm a registered voter. I wrote and gave a speech for my government class about a week ago. Okay, here we go.
You're doing great.
Capital punishment is just a fancy phrase for legally killing people. This is quoted from Anthony G. Amsterdam in the book, The Death Penalty in America. This speech is the way I feel about capital punishment. I'm very strongly opposed to the death penalty. I'd like to start my speech talking about the proponents and why they believe the death penalty. In my research, I discovered three main reasons. The first is deterrent. They feel executing a man for a crime to deter other people from committing those same crimes. The second was to protect society. The rationale for this is that if they're executed, they're no longer a problem or a threat to our society. The third was retribution, the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth conviction. In other words, the punishment should fit the crime. The problem
people are being lost, yes, it is people that could be helped. The opponents of the death penalty, myself included, have several good reasons why capital punishment should be abolished. In most religious sects, you can find prohibitions to murder. Christianity is a good example. To quote the Bible in Exodus 20:13, under the 10th commandment, one clearly states, thou shalt not kill. I feel that this speaks for itself. Discrimination is also a growing problem that is becoming rapidly larger. According to Anthony Chiamstram again, 1930, an almost equal number of white and black defendants has been executed for the crime of murder, although black constitutes only about one-tenth of the nation's population during this period. Also, the National Crime Commission in 1966 stated, the death sentence is disproportionately imposed and carried out on the poor, the Negro, and members of unpopular groups. Then there is the miscarriage of justice and the wrong people being accused, and the National Catholic Reporter, November 29, 1985. Since 1900, 19 people have been found innocent 72 hours before their sentence was to take place. What if they would have been found innocent 72 hours after their execution? From the same source, I found that the 25 out of 7,1900 were wrongly accused of their crime. 25 out of 7,000 may not seem like many, but think how you would feel if 25 of your friends and family died for something you didn't even do. My constitutional beliefs are based on the 8th and 14th Amendments. The 8th Amendment states, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines be imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments be inflicted. This is one of my strongest feelings behind the death penalty. I feel capital punishment is very cruel, not as unusual as I would like it to be, though, since it has been going on for centuries. The 14th Amendment states, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. This is a very strong point also. My alternatives for solving this problem would be to first abolish the death penalty completely. There would obviously have to be life imprisonment instead. Prisons would have to have stronger rules and regulations imposed on them. The prisoner should also have to go through whatever rehabilitation is necessary to try and mentally stabilize them. To quote Henry Schwarzschild's last update issued February 9, 1987, only 1% of people who commit capital crimes punishable by death are actually executed. Without the death penalty, we would simply do to that 1% what we do with the other 99%. In closing, I would like to read a quote from Albert Camus, who wrote the book which can be translated into English as Stranger or the Outsider, and is known as the most powerful attack on capital punishment. Capital punishment is the most premeditated of murders, to which no criminal deed, however calculated, can be compared. For there to be an equivalency, the death penalty would have to punish a criminal who had warned his victim of the date at which he would inflict a horrible death on him, and who, from that moment onward, had confined him at his mercy for months. Such a monster is not encountered in private life, and I myself believe that it should not be encountered in public life either.
Thank you, Michelle. Lisa Fitzpatrick, please.
My name is Lisa Fitzpatrick, and I'm speaking to you today as a private citizen. The reason I'm here, the reason I'm testifying, is because I wanted to state clearly my opposition to the death penalty. I oppose the death penalty on both moral and intellectual grounds. As far as the intellectual arguments go, I think they've been pretty well stated earlier by members of the Amnesty International Group and the Liberties Union. I'm not a member of the Amnesty International Group, however, I support the arguments they've made. I've read the materials, and I encourage you all to read the materials yourselves. As far as the moral opposition goes, I just can't say anything simpler than there's no justification for killing. To say that there is such a thing as legalized killing is, in my mind, an oxymoron. It's a contradiction in terms. You cannot justify killing. And when the state tries to justify killing, the state itself is committing, in my mind, a crime. I want to go on record here to encourage you all to consider your positions very carefully and to, when you vote for on this bill, to oppose the death penalty. I also want to clear my conscience, because if you all do pass the death penalty bill, I want it to be clear that my record is clear, that I've stated my opposition, and I don't want anything on my hands, any blood on my hands, for people who are subjected to the death penalty.
Lisa, thank you very much. John Salemi? Tony Harsh is next. Marcy Clark is after Tony.
Thank you.
Anchorage, if you're talking to me, I can't hear you.
All right, can you hear us now?
We can hear you right now.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
All right, I didn't hear any of John's testimony, so he needs to begin again, starting with his name.
Senator Fakes, I haven't started yet.
Oh, okay, good. We haven't missed anything then.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm not a member of any group which opposes the death penalty or supports it. I'm not a member of Amnesty International, but after hearing the articulate arguments of certain of their members, perhaps I should join their organization. I'm speaking as a private citizen, and I agree with someone who came before me when he said that this is an emotional issue. I would like to caution the senators, however, that although an emotional issue, the issue should not be decided based on emotion or an emotional reaction. I'm opposed to the death penalty, and I just wanted to, in some ways, reiterate some of the arguments that have been made. First of all, I believe that my position is based on the premise that the purpose of government is to enhance the common good. And I've searched my soul. I've listened to the argument here for a couple of hours now. I've read some of the literature, and I honestly have not been able to find the value in enacting the death penalty in our state or having it in our society. I think to suggest that there is some deterrent value, in other words, that crime is reduced or violent crime is reduced or murder is reduced, would be to engage in a statistical fantasy. One of the reasons I came here today was because I thought perhaps I would hear the other side of the coin with respect to this issue. But in listening to the many people who favor the death penalty who have testified, I have yet to hear some sort of study or statistical analysis that shows there is deterrent value to enactment of the death penalty. Secondly, besides the lack of deterrent value, it's my belief, based on my research and my thoughts, that this is not a just law. Even though it may be neutral on its face, and I've read your law, your proposed legislation, and it appears to be neutral and consistent with the decision in Furman versus Georgia, the U.S. Supreme Court decision, the fact of the matter is, the law is going to be applied by human beings. And human beings, as both you and I know, make mistakes. Sometimes they're honest mistakes. Sometimes they're not even mistakes. They're just judgments based on bias and prejudice. And I think the result of that will be the unfair treatment of individuals and of groups. The bottom line will be that rather than creating a more just society, we'll be promoting a basic unfairness in our society as it relates to our criminal justice system. What's going to happen, what has already happened historically, is that some innocent people are going to be put to death. And I think each senator should think long and hard about that. I mean, we're trying to cure a situation in our society, and in some ways, the very situation that we're trying to cure, we perpetuate through these mistakes of killing innocent people who are wrongly convicted of crimes. Secondly, and it's been stated, but I wish to state it over and over again, is this: poor people and racial minorities will be executed in numbers much greater than their overall representation in our community. There's a saying which I saw on a poster long ago, which in essence summarizes my position, and that is, those without the capital get the punishment. Just a couple of other things. And I guess the last point I wish to make is that, well, not the last, I got a couple more. Second to last is that I don't think our criminal justice system should be based on revenge or retribution. I just do not think that is an enlightened approach to a problem. I think it's something of a barbaric one. Someone once said, to execute a murderer is simply to adopt his point of view. And I think that was well said. Someone before me mentioned that they believe that the ills of our society can be traced back to the fact that we are now coddling criminals, that judges can't be trusted, and that our laws are not harsh or severe enough. I would remind people that we can't remove perpetrators of violent crime and murderers from society without killing them. And if you look at recent history in Alaska, and some of the people who have already been mentioned, people who have committed violent crimes, look at their sentences. The Mr. Hansen, who was mentioned for his serial killings of the prostitutes, received in excess of 400 years in prison. Charles Leach is currently serving a sentence in excess of 300 years. Kirby Anthony last year received a sentence in excess of 300 years in prison. Louis Hastings received a sentence of over 600 years in prison. And Kevin Collins, these are all people that were earlier mentioned by a proponent of the death penalty, received a sentence of 400 years in prison. I would hazard a guess that none of those people will walk the streets of Alaska again. So that summarizes my feeling and is the conclusion of my testimony. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before your body.
Well, I appreciate it. John, are you the acting public defender who signed this fiscal note in front of me?
I sure did, $1.5 million. I forgot to mention that this is going to be an expensive proposition for the state of Alaska.
Well, the fiscal note still has to go through the Finance Committee and the perusal of this committee, so we'll have lots of questions to you on how you develop this fiscal note. Thank you for your testimony. I hope there was no one you're supposed to be defending today that missed your defense because you were here testifying before this committee. Is Tony Harsh there, please? Marcy Clark will be next. Good show.
Good day, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you. My name is Tony Harsh.
3 hours of
public I'm here to register my opposition to the death penalty, my opposition and the opposition of my husband, who unfortunately cannot be here being stuck in Pasadena right now. A couple of things before I get to my reasons why I oppose it. I wish to remind some here that opposing the death penalty is not incompatible with the experience of tragedy or empathy with those who suffer the terrible loss occasioned by murder. Further, contrary to popular myth, this country was founded as a secular nation and continues to be so, specifically so that each person may be free in his or her own belief or disbelief. Furthermore, and most importantly, we are a nation of laws, not revenge. The first reason, set of reasons that I have for opposing this bill is that it in itself is flawed, and most particularly in section 1255-179, paragraphs 5 and 6, you seem to be creating two classes of victim, that is government officials versus ordinary citizens, for the same crime. I recognize the need of government to protect itself, but declaring itself a separate class on this most fundamental level is completely contrary to the essential spirit, if not letter, of our Constitution. Further, given demonstrable failure of the death penalty to deter homicide, the utility of these provisions, except as a bureaucratic exercise in self-aggrandizement, is questionable. Number two, the pragmatic reasons for opposing the bill include the fact that it doesn't deter crime. This has been statistically proven time and time again. There's no predictable correlation between a death penalty law and the rise or fall of the murder rate. It's prone to error and abuse. Innocent people have been killed and will continue to be. Think about this. What if you were up for execution on a false charge? It is much more expensive than incarceration and rehabilitation both combined due to the unsuccessful attempt to eliminate error. If none of the above is why you consider the ethical issues, the ethical consideration include the following. If I let myself go after the murderer, am I not stooping to his moral level? And is the state acting as my agent not also murdering? Killing can be justified in so few instances that it's hardly reasonable that the state, with so comparatively many remedies, for instance, incarceration and rehabilitation, should be justified in applying only the most abhorrent. Can we not further argue that we are, in acting like savage murderers, becoming savages ourselves, and therefore undermining the whole progress of our attempts at civilization? Further, should we not, as a civilization, really, honestly, and with enough funding, try and fix our prison and rehabilitation systems before acting by extremes? Bluntly, the death penalty seems to me to be an emotional quick fix, an institutional cop-out, an encouragement to hysteria, and a return to the howling mob. Let us not confuse justice with vengeance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Let's see. I'm going to mess up this pronunciation. It's A. Coinger, Coginger.
Yeah. name is Marcy Clark, and I was supposed to be next.
Oh, Marcy, I'm sorry. Okay, you're next, and then we'll have the gentleman who I can't pronounce his name. Please proceed, Marcy. I'm sorry.
Thank you. My name is Marcy Clark, and I have lived in Alaska for 21 years. I would like to go on record in support of the death penalty. I would also like to make a point to Mr. Swami, or whatever his name was, I can't, that Cordell Boyd and Winona Fletcher were also sentenced to real long lives in the jail. And then a while later, Judge Carlson went back and he lowered their sentences. So those two people will be allowed to walk the streets of Alaska again. And if we could put our criminals in jail for 99 years without any parole, that would be wonderful. But when we have judges that go back behind the public staff, did not say anything to the newspapers or to anyone else, and lower the sentences of murderers, then I think we have to have the death penalty so that we won't have that happening, having the murderers walk the streets of Alaska.
Marcy, thank you very much for staying with us today and testifying. The next gentleman, please, Coinger or Coinger, and then Ken Spadafora. Boy, I'm messing up these names, and I apologize.
That's all right. My name is Art Kenninger. I'm a resident of Chitna. I'm here in Anchorage today. I'm a member of the privileged class of firemen which you're protecting. And I, as a matter of background, I grew up in Huntsville, Texas, which is where they used to execute and today do continue to execute Texas prisoners. My father was the director of Bureau of Classifications for a number of years there and did extensive research on the Texas death penalty. I'd like to go on record here as opposing the death penalty, and I feel that there's been innumerable testimony today supporting that that stand, and would like to just go on record as opposing that. I feel that is the death penalty. There is no appeal for once the person is executed, that's it. There's no going back. And all of the arguments for outlining the inefficacy of it and that it is not a deterrent, I think, is more than been made today. So I'll just pass on to the next person. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for coming in and taking the time to testify. Is Ken next? And then Allison J., Sheila Langford. And then that's all I have. And I have one more person to testify here in Juneau. And I want the audience in Anchorage to know that Senator Porchot joined us a few minutes ago, and he's been listening to the testimony also.
My name is Ken Spatafor. The views and comments I have to make are my own. I do not represent any group or agency. I am for the death penalty. I'm a homicide detective. I've investigated numerous homicide cases in Alaska. I've been in very close contact with the friends and families of the victims in numerous murder cases. I've personally seen the enormous damage done by some of these individuals. Some cases of homicide may not warrant the death penalty, but in some extremely heinous cases, the death penalty is the only guarantee to prevent these killers from escaping or being released to kill again. There is no such thing as an escape-proof prison. Ted Bundy is a prime example of what these killers, who have nothing to lose, will do back in society. Bundy killed several women after he escaped twice. In order for the death penalty to be a strong deterrent, it must be swiftly applied. I do agree that in the current situation in several states where it takes as much as 10 years to have it resolved, it loses a lot of its deterrent effect. I personally believe that it does have a limited deterrent effect the way it is, and that effect could be stronger if it were more swiftly applied. If it deters just one would-be killer from taking one innocent victim away from his or her family critical to prevent one or two jurors from causing a hung jury, which might acquit a defendant, in order to avoid him or her being executed. I personally do not mind the extra work that might be involved in investigating these particular cases due to this bill. I've interviewed several Rankage's most notorious murderers and have convinced these people have no conscience. And the society cannot take the slightest chance these people will ever be given the opportunity to kill again. When we incarcerate somebody for life, we do it to protect society and punish the individual. When that life sentence was passed, it was passed because we have given up on rehabilitating this person. We are not and cannot rehabilitate these people. Too many individuals are willing to take a chance with other people's lives to prove they have a cure for these killers. I think it is time for this to stop. We cannot afford to have today's sociopathic killers released or escape during our children's generation. As far as how many of these killers are white or black is immaterial. We are not going to execute people because of their color. We are executing them for committing cold-blooded murder. The majority of the reasons these killers have given for committing these murders are sexual gratification, money, revenge, power. I have yet to take a confession from a murderer who has killed someone just because he came from the wrong neighborhood. In closing, I want to say that I do not enjoy the thought of having to execute someone. I'm strong enough to carry it out to protect the law-abiding citizens of Alaska. Thank you for your time.
Ken, appreciate that very much. Are you with the APD or the state troopers? Next, we have Allison J., please.
Apparently, Allison had to leave. The next person I have to testify is Pat McGee.
All right. I'll take Pat McGee. I don't have them on my list anywhere. As long as they... What about Sharon Nahoney?
I do believe she's gone, as well as Sheila Langford.
Okay. So is this the last person you have there to testify?
Second to the last. I have one more after this. Jeanette Jean.
Oh, Jeanette Jean? Okay, put them on in the order you have them, and we'll be glad to take this testimony.
Thank you, committee. My name is Pat McGee. I've lived in Anchorage over 40 years. The last person that testified brought up the question that some of these folks can't be rehabilitated, and, you know, we all can agree with that. They are psychopathic people who can't be rehabilitated. But I do think our laws can put these folks away. One of the things that bothers me that came out just now was the fact of getting a jury. I know for a fact, because I am not in favor of capital punishment, I would be washed off of a jury first selection. And I think what you are going to end up with is the people on the jury are certainly going to say they have either no opinion or they are going to be for capital punishment. I don't see how you're going to get a jury, and certainly not a jury of peers. This fact alone bothers me. Also, one of the things that I'd like to bring out, my mother was a teacher for many years, and when you're teaching any kids, you see children who obviously are in distress. I mean, there's mental problems there. There's things that they probably could do to help these kids, but you don't become a psychopathic killer overnight. I think what we need to do is train our teachers and give our people screening so these people can be recognized early on. Certainly, we could spend a lot of money in a lot of areas. Most of the folks who do killing and most of the folks that are on death row have been unemployed for practically all of their lives. We aren't reaching these people. We aren't employing them. And we've got a lot of work to do making our citizens become good citizens. And I think we have to start way, way